This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Let's talk about the good, because there's a lot of it. There's some bad, of course. We'll talk about that, too. What's going to happen with this trade war with China that's apparently about to kick off? All that military against the cartels and more coming up on I'm Right. All right, let's talk about great things and some bad things. Let's talk about both, because here's what's important. I've discovered this in my 44 years and definitely in my 20 years of being a political person. Well, didn't grow up that way, but about 20 years ago, I started to get political. We should never get too high. We should never get too low. That's really generally a very good rule for life anyway, right? But in politics, you get a big win. Trump wins in November. It can be easy to get caught up in the emotions. All our problems are solved. We'll never lose power again. That's not true. And look, Joe Biden steals an election in 2020. The communists take over and they gave the whole country up. We look around and we think this country is officially Sodom and Gomorrah. The world is just going to open up and suck us down into hell. All is lost. That's not really true either. We should talk about the good and the bad. Yesterday was Columbus Day. All right. It's a good day. It's an important day. You honor the people who helped build your nation. You don't sit and nitpick about this and that, baby, but you honor the people who had a hand in laying the foundation for your country. That's a good thing. Donald Trump issued a proclamation declaring it Columbus Day. A very, very good thing. That stuff is not small. That stuff matters. That's culture stuff. Culture stuff is more important than anything else. That's the good news. We have good guidance on that kind of stuff right now. Here's some bad news. We still have a ways to go with the GOP itself. All of them. There's a lot of gunk still we have to clean out. And that's going to take years and years and years and years and years. We like to think that now that we've gotten our heads back on straight and we're doing well, that hey, all these old lame GOPers, the low-T GOP, they're just going to go by the wayside. But no, it takes years to root these people out of power, especially senators. The Senate Majority Leader is John Thune. Yesterday on Columbus Day, he was completely silent about Christopher Columbus. He did come out and put up a social media post honoring Native American Day. Now, Native American Day, to be frank, it is a thing in South Dakota, but read the room, Senator. Read the room. Everyone knows how that would be interpreted. Everyone, of course, except for the low-T pathetic senator from South Dakota. Red states have to start doing better getting these senators out. I know that's easier said than done. It will take years, but just a little reminder, we have a long way to go. But where could we be? Because Donald Trump's president, and in my opinion, has done a pretty dang good job so far. But I realize we can nitpick. It's easy to do so. I've criticized Donald Trump many times before, talking into this camera. You probably have yourself, your family, thinking, I don't like this, I wish he hadn't done this, wish he hadn't said that. Easy to nitpick, and that's fine. You should do that. Don't be a cheerleader. Put the pom-poms down. But let's remember where we could be. Remember last year, when Dome went to the camera and talked about Columbus Day?
It is an honor, of course, to be with you this week as we celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day, as we speak truth about our nation's history. Since 1934, every October, the United States has recognized the voyage of the European explorers who first landed on the shores of the Americas. But that is not the whole story. That has never been the whole story. Those explorers ushered in a wave of devastation for tribal nations, perpetrating violence, stealing land, and spreading disease. We must not shy away from this shameful past.
They can't just say, it's a great day. Celebrate somebody. They can't ever just celebrate America. And for 4 years, you remember it, for 4 years, those were the people guiding this culture and this country. And it sucked, didn't it? It sucked. But then the country rose up and said, nah, we're done with that. We're done with that. Feel good about that. These people can't really celebrate anything at all. Yesterday, that peace deal, and I've been honest with you about how long I think it's going to last, but still, no matter what, Israel, Hamas, killing each other as fast as possible for 2 years, people being held hostage, starving to death for 2 years. So yesterday, big peace deal, and people were being reunited with their families. Look, even if it's a peace that lasts for 5 minutes, it's only good. It's not bad at all, but Dome couldn't do it.
I really do hope it becomes real and that the hostages are out, that Gaza is no longer being treated with such brutality of force, that aid goes in.
A lot of folks in your party have called what's happening in Gaza a genocide. Do you agree with that?
I think that, listen, it is a term of law that a court will decide. But I will tell you that when you look at the number of children that have been killed, the number of innocent civilians that have been killed, the refusal to give aid and support, we should all step back and ask this question and be honest about it. Yeah.
So what's going on there besides the normal word salad stuff? Well, here's what's going on. This applies to Dome. It's going to apply to every Democrat across the country. We talked about it a little bit. We talked about it many times before, actually. Their base is so radicalized now in so many different ways that even if you have moderate thoughts, reasonable thoughts as a Democrat politician, you can't because you're afraid of these people.
Legacy is genocide!
War criminal!
You know what? I am not president of the United States. You want to go to the White House and talk to him? They don't want to do that.
They're afraid of those people. I'll use this as we wrap it up here because we have so much we have to get to on this show. I know you've probably seen it, probably heard people talking about it, but that Abigail Spanberger, who's trying to be governor of Virginia, she was asked about the men and women sports things. And keep in mind that this is something that pulls 80% in the country. People, not just you and me, people, even normies, independents, they do not want dudes pretending to be women playing against women in sports. This is one of those, it's an easy issue. 80-20, just take the 80 if you're a politician. And Democrats know that too. They know it's an 80-20 issue. They know where they should fall on it. But their base is so demonic, so insane, so obsessed with chopping off people's body parts and this weird sexual demonic garbage. Their base is so obsessed with it, they can't come out and say that. So they have to try to walk this tightrope that can't be walked. Here she was.
Focusing on a K-12 school system, should transgender girls who are biological males be allowed to use girls' bathrooms and play on girls' sports teams? You have 60 seconds.
Finish. On issues related to what's happening in our schools and each individual community, I think it's important that we have parents and teachers and administrators making decisions about their individual schools, not politicians.
Once again, the question was, should transgender girls who are biological males be allowed to use girls' bathrooms and play on girls' sports teams in K-12? You have 15 seconds to clarify.
In cases across Virginia, I think it's incumbent upon parents and educators and administrators in each local community to make decisions locally.
Would you rescind the Youngkin administration policy requiring boys and girls to use bathrooms aligning with their biological sex? You have 30 seconds.
My priority would be to ensure that local communities, importantly parents and teachers,
that's
and educators,
yes or no,
are able to work together to meet the unique needs of each school and each community.
But Ms. Spanberger, the question was, Would you rescind the Youngkin administration policy requiring boys and girls to use bathrooms aligning with their biological sex? You have 15 seconds to clarify that question.
Yes.
And my answer is that in each local community, decisions should be made between parents and educators and teachers in each community.
I hope you got real used to that answer, because you have heard the Rear Admiral Pete Buttigieg give that same answer. What happened was Democrats, the communists, got together and they tried to figure out an answer that would be the appropriate tightrope walk across the United States of America. Mark my words, you will hear over and over and over again from Democrats in the coming years an answer just like that. A word salad thing, but then something that kind of references local control. I mean, it's really out of my hands, up to the parents. People are crazy, but we're winning. Take heart in that. Julio Rosas is winning. He's all over the street communism, as he always is, and we're going to talk to him in just a moment. Now, you know what else is winning? Fat. Not the bad kind. Not the feminist kind. People were starting to wake up and realize that all these canola oils and vegetable oil, these things are freaking terrible for you. Look, this is from me. I used to get my grilled cheese sandwiches deep fried in vegetable oil. Okay, I know. But fat is not bad. When it's beef tallow, when it's golden age fats, it's not only good for you, it's delicious. It tastes better. Remember what McDonald's fries used to taste like before they started tasting like chemicals? Go get some golden age fats and cook with that, guilt-free. Guilt-free because it's natural. That's all we use in my house. We have a big tub of it. Go to goldenagefats.com/JesseTV. It'll save you 25%. Go get a tub. We'll be back.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President, for having us here. And, you know, not to sound like a broken record, but it needs to be said that Antifa is real. To be clear, political violence, sustained political violence that we're seeing in this country is not a both sides issue.
I can't believe Julio Rosas was allowed in the White House. Can't believe how good he did. Joining me now, my buddy Julio Rosas, national correspondent with The Blaze, United States Marine. Julio, you've come a long way from standing on some yellow footprints getting screamed at, my friend, to hanging with the big man.
It was quite a surprise. I was literally coming back from Portland when I was invited, and you know, of course I accepted, because this issue is something that I've been aware of and have seen firsthand for a long time, right? And a lot of people just really want to not believe that this movement exists, and of course it does, right? And so when you have the opportunity to present your findings and present your experiences to not just the president but also, you know, people who are watching in the press pool, you're gonna say yes to that one.
Julio, walk me through what the point of it was. Was this just bringing in experts, like people like you who've been knee-deep with these street animals for years? What are they coming up with a plan? What did you get out of this?
Well, so there was a couple of reasons. One, it was just to lay out the facts of what all these different people have experienced about this group, right? And you know, when the president is there participating, there's a reason for that, right? And people are gonna tune in a little bit more than if it's just some other member of his cabinet. I mean, this is the president. This guy's a busy guy. And so that was just the first thing. It was just to say that, yes, Antifa's real. It exists, and we're looking at it. That's what the administration was trying to say. And it was because, you know, the press pool is there. It's to kind of force the mainstream media to at least acknowledge that this is a thing, right? Now, of course, I would say that the mainstream coverage was to be expected, but it at least puts in people's mind that this is an ongoing issue. They're using the anti-ICE, you know, fever outrage to fuel themselves to try to achieve their goals. But it was also to reassure not just us, you know, people who have experienced them in some cases violently, but also to the voters that yes, the administration is maintaining its pledge to go after not just the individual people that they happen to get at these riots, but also its support networks, which are very active right now. They've been active for a number of years.
Julio, can you talk about the level of support you think these people are getting? It's obvious to anyone who pays attention, this is not organic stuff. So there's some level of sophistication to it, certainly some level of funding and organization, but you have actually had to smell these people, which has to be brutal. What do you get from their level of sophistication?
Well, that's why I wear a gas mask, not just for the tear gas. but they do get support. I mean, I saw it in Chaz back in Seattle back in 2020. Most recently outside the facility, the ICE facility in Broadview, Illinois, which is outside Chicago, someone dropped off a whole bunch of large and small Mexican flags. I mean, that costs money. The support are in big and small ways. In Portland, outside the ICE facility there, they have a couple of tents with all these different supplies that are dropped off. And then the kind of the more, I would say, nefarious and more, you know, more expensive items are the bail funds. I mean, that's probably one of the biggest ways that they get support is just, you know, because obviously they're not going to be in jail for very long, or, you know, they're going to rarely receive any actual prison sentence. So if they do happen to get arrested, they can be back out relatively quickly because they have all these bail funds that they can access. And some of them are international. And that's why when President Trump was asking, well, are these guys a foreign terrorist organization? Have we designated that? We said no. And it probably should, because Antifa is just not unique to the United States, but they're very active in Europe, like Germany, France, in the UK. So that was kind of another thing that kind of came out of that is, like, you know, because Secretary Rubio walked in to give him the news about Hamas and the, you know, the historic peace deal. But also mixed into that, President Trump, you know, went to Rubio and said, hey, we should probably take a look at that as well, since that would fall under a kind of his domain. So I would say that, you know, it was a very productive meeting, right? And again, it just, when you're on the ground and stuff, you kind of forget that what you put out there is seen by, you know, a lot of people. And so it was just kind of validating to know that, you know, it was just validating to see that the hard work that gets put into this, because there's a lot that goes into these things in terms of time, energy, resources, and personal safety. It is worth it because there are people who are in a position to do something about it beyond just recording it, are taking note of it and want to follow through on action.
Yeah, that's got to feel good to see the fruits of your labor. Okay, so two things for this question. One, we heard Kash Patel talk about tracking down George Soros' connections and things like that to that. How many layers do you think there are between the billionaires who stroke the checks and the street animals who are pooping on themselves out in front of the ICE facility? And two, how many Mexican flags did you take?
I did take one as a memento. Full disclosure, it was offered to me, and I said, you know what? Yeah, I'm gonna add. I take things from, you know, I take rubber bullets and tear gas canisters and everything just as a memento. So yes, I did take one. But I always carry the American flag. That's always in my backpack when I'm at these things. But the more serious thing, I would say that there's a few layers. It's not super complicated, right? Because when you have things like, you know, Soros' network or any other of these like left wing billionaires, they give them to these nonprofits, right? And the nonprofits then kind of disperse it to the networks to the activists that are on the street because it's local, right? I mean, they're very good at organizing at the local level, and so I wouldn't say, I mean, it's not that complicated once you start kind of peeling back those layers and to say that, you know, it's not probably 50 degrees removed. It's probably only about two or three. If you're looking at it through that. But also I would say that unfortunately these people genuinely believe what they're espousing about promoting this anarcho-communism ideology that's kind of wrapped in with Antifa. It's not anti-fascist in the sense of like World War II veterans. I mean they would call those guys fascists for the beliefs that they held. So it's just nonsensical on its face. But because of how President Trump is actually carrying out his promises to try to carry out mass deportations, that alone gets people out in the streets. And that's what I told the president. I said, this issue isn't necessarily about just Antifa. We've seen seemingly ordinary people ramming ICE vehicles, ramming Border Patrol, attacking Border Patrol and ICE while they're out there. It's not people dressed up in Black Bloc. It's like just these people who have been extremely radicalized within this past year, because the mainstream media is so responsible with their reporting about all this. So that's kind of the bigger problem, because you don't need to be part of Antifa to just throw yourself in there into the mix to try to, you know, save these people from being kidnapped. And that's why I think it's going to be we're going to be in it for a while, because things might calm down a little bit in the country once it starts getting colder for this fall and winter. But I guarantee it's just going to be just like fighting season in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's going to start right back up again once the conditions are conducive to them to be out there for hours on end. So, this is going to be an issue for quite some time.
Julio, I know you've already seen it. Shoot, you might have been there, but this is Brandon Johnson in Chicago.
Our very democracy as we know it is under attack. And if there were ever a time for working people to unite around this country, this is that time. Look, I've started off as a public school teacher, organizing in communities to ensure that we protect the very fundamental rights of the access to education and housing and healthcare and transportation, good paying jobs. These are all of the things that we fought for after the Civil War. And now this president is literally attacking the sanctity of what this democracy is about, securing opportunities for every single person who wishes to call the city of Chicago or this country their home. That's what's under attack right now. But I'm grateful that there are organizers around the city of Chicago and throughout the country, as I have conversations with mayors, that are very clear and determined that we're going to defend this democracy, protect our humanity, and put an end to this tyrant.
Julio, my concern, it's not just for Chicago or Portland or anywhere else, is as the Trump administration goes into these places, they're not Washington, D.C., where the government controls it. It is hostile territory, and even the cops don't seem to be on our side.
Absolutely. It's insurrection, plain and simple, like an actual, real insurrection. It's a low level right now, but I mean, the fact that the Chicago police were ordered to not respond to a crowd forming on Border Patrol and ICE agents because of a agent-involved shooting, defensive shooting, I should note, that's a problem. I mean, at a minimum, they're supposed to be there for crowd control, and by the time that they were finally there, it was too late. The situation had gotten so out of control that Border Patrol had to use tear gas to clear everybody out because they were done with the investigation, the initial, you know, combing through of the scene. So this is being perpetuated by the Democratic Party, and they're saying it. They're openly saying it right now that if they get back into power in 2028, they're going to go after ICE. They're going to go after Border Patrol for the crime of enforcing immigration law that's been law for a number of years. Right? This isn't anything new. This is not putting people in concentration camps. This is not ethnic cleansing or any of this other nonsense. The border was open for 4 years. None of this would have happened. We would not be in this position now if the Biden-Harris administration purposefully opened the border and allowed millions of people from all over the world to come in. The American people said, no, we're not going to put up with that. We're going to go with President Trump this time around again because this needs to be fixed. So all of this is the Democrats' fault, and it's just a way to shift blame and just try to consolidate power as they always do, right? And they're using their street activists, their street radicals to achieve that, and try to say, well, no, oh, look at this, you know, repression that we're facing now from the federal government. It's like, yeah, because you're the ones encouraging it. This is your fault.
Julio, stay safe out there, my brother. Happy for you. All right, we're going to talk about the border. Before we talk about the border, I want to talk to you about chips. I love chips so much. You know, I recently made my world-famous smoked queso on the smoker. And you know what I dipped in it? Massa chips. Massa chips. They're the only chips I can eat where I don't get the long face from the wife, because it's just three ingredients. It's not all this cancer-causing filth that's in every other chip. But of course, I know exactly what you're thinking right now. Oh, so they're gross. Full disclosure, that's the exact same thing I thought when my buddy Cernovich told me about Massa chips. I said, okay, so it's flavorless trash. They're the best chips I've ever had in my life. They're amazing. just a good crunch on them. I have to fight my youngest son over them, and he's a junk food freak. He prefers them over other chips. Three ingredients. Not crap. Good stuff. Eat it guilt-free. You won't feel all bloated and horrible afterwards. MassaChips.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, again, I know there's a lot of good, a lot of bad, but let's focus on something that is wonderful. We are officially at a net negative for immigration in this country for the first time in a long time. And I understand we've got about another 50 million, I mean, who knows how many, to get out. But right now the border is closed, the border is secured, and we're deporting people, and we are slowly getting our country back, and it's a good thing. Joining me now, Emin Blair, Senior Fellow at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, which is a wonderful organization, by the way, if you're not familiar. Also, former Border Patrol, Army. Emin, I'm happy, man.
Yeah, this is all good news. All the numbers are pointing in the right direction.
Emin, can you explain how it happened so fast? How was it so fast to go from a border that's wide open to one that is sealed up tight?
Yeah, sure. It's really, at the end of the day, following the rule of law. That's all we had to do. The law of expelling those that are here illegally, or actually pushing back those that are trying to come into our country or make incursions between the ports of entry and just simply not letting them in. Really, that's at the end of the day what really happened at our southern border. And so when you look at that and you look at that measurement of illegal apprehensions at our southern border, that's a good one, as well as the fentanyl seizures at our southern border. But something that's kind of that maybe your public or your audience needs to understand is, unfortunately, those are really one of the only two metrics we're really looking at in terms of whether the border is secure or not. I know that you served in the Marine Corps for quite some time, and if you were in a contingency operation overseas, how would you measure whether that border that you were trying to defend is secure? Now, unfortunately for us, because DHS is the lead agency, we measure it by terms of apprehensions, turnbacks, and gotaways, and that's what's codified in law. And so it's immigration metrics. And then we also have drug seizure metrics like fentanyl. But by all measures, unfortunately, the border is still operationally controlled by the Mexican cartels. They just have decided to move some of their smuggling operations outside of the southern border area of operations.
Okay, Emin, that is news to a lot of people. Please expand on that. If they're not crossing the border, where are they crossing?
Sure, great question. So, and I'm not talking specifically about illegal aliens, but a lot of the illegal aliens that are coming across now are those that don't want to get caught. So they're going to be in camouflage, just like what Breitbart puts out, or your friend Brandon Darby. He puts out all the pictures of the illegal aliens in camouflage or wearing carpet shoes, and they're bypassing Border Patrol agents and other law enforcement along the border. And how they're doing that is they're utilizing surveillance and reconnaissance assets through drones. The Rio Grande Valley sector where I served recently had over 40,000 drone incursions. There are so many drones in the air that sometimes we can't even have air support inside the air. And so when you have that ability to see the entire operational environment, you can dictate to the smuggling organizations on the ground exactly where to go, what area law enforcement is currently not present, and you can bypass us. You can go on Twitter today and actually see smuggling organizations posting their drone videos of guiding illegal aliens inside the country. So also narcotics. All you have to do is look at the price of cocaine right now. It's actually decreased. And the reason being is the amount of cocaine inside the United States is unprecedented. The cartels have just shifted, since we're only looking at fentanyl seizures, the cartels have completely shifted their commodity. And that is going to be meth and cocaine. Imagine, like, back in the day, we used to talk about, like, the Caribbean. We would go after the Caribbean, where really the smuggling trade of cocaine was really prevalent in, like, Florida and along the coast. And then it shifted, when we shifted our priorities to that area, it shifted to Mexico. And then, so now, unfortunately, it's shifted back. And that's why you're seeing President Trump make those military attacks on Tren de Aragua and the gunboats or the drug boats in the Caribbean. And that is because the operations by the cartels, whether from Venezuela or Mexico, have shifted back in that region.
Ammon, can you tell me, because it never comes up, right? Everyone just looks south. But we have a very, very large border north. Is it a problem, or do we at least have that one fairly locked down?
A great question. In fact, I was just in Canada this week. I was speaking with the First Nations chief of police or of their peacekeepers. I was there with their Canadian law enforcement, as well as public officials, as well as their fentanyl and border czar. I'm unfortunately here to tell you and your audience that the cartels, like I said, they shift, and they shifted to Canada, as well as the Chinese triad. And since we have not placed a lot of our resources to include manpower, technology on our northern border, as well as not really assisting the First Nations or the Native American tribal areas in terms of understanding what is coming across and who's coming across, it is completely open game for the Mexican cartels to traffic both north and south. And that is also illegal aliens. Look, before when the Mexican cartels in the first parts of the Biden administration, they were flying illegal aliens as well as cartel members from Mexico City to Quebec. And then they started creating their own version of a pipeline or a Silk Road, have you, from that area back into the United States. So as it stands right now, that is a major hub. In the Canadian, the provinces in Canada, that's why they came down and reached out to us at Texas Public Policy Foundation. And they're asking, look, under the Biden administration, Texas, they came out on top. They figured out a way to push the federal government and try to secure its communities. Please come and help our communities when our federal government is not willing to look at the Mexican cartels, look at the CCP in their proxies, the triads, and any other criminal organizations. Please come and help us. And so as it stands now, that's what we're doing. We were in Canada this week. We're going to be continually working with our Canadian partners up there, whether that's the Mounties, the military, law enforcement services, as well as the private industry, actually secure the northern border.
Ammon, final question here. Donald Trump has said over and over again, you know, declared war on the cartels, eradicate the cartels. Do you get the impression we are going to start doing kinetic things inside Mexico?
Great question. Man, I really wish the infantry soldier in me, and I know the Marine in you, really wants to go out and just completely lay waste to the Mexican cartels. We really do. But really, just like what happened in the first Trump administration, President Trump, instead of designating the cartels as foreign terrorist organizations in 2019, he backed off and instead created the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, that trade agreement for free trade. And so he backed off going after the cartels and then instead went after Maduro and then the Venezuelan cartels, right? The Cartel of the Suns and then trafficking coming out of Venezuela. You can see that now. A lot of the hits that are taking place in the Caribbean, that's not Mexican cartels, though they are connected either to CJNG and Sinaloa. Those are connected to Venezuela. And so what we're seeing is we're seeing more of a foreign diplomacy or diplomatic efforts against Mexico, whether that is decreasing the visas from their elected officials, whether that is the threat of tariffs. But at the end of the day, that's really not making a mark on the Mexican cartels. They're in 65 countries. Like I said, they're shifting their operations to Canada. The country of Poland just had to wipe out a massive meth lab cell right on the border of Poland and Germany. So the cartels are just shifting, still operating their command or headquarters inside of Mexico. So yes, we definitely do need kinetic action against the cartels, as well as all the other asymmetric warfare ways and means to go after them, whether that's foreign diplomacy or any other means. But do I see that? Unfortunately, no, because of that trade. We are dependent on Mexico for a lot of things, but especially food. Right now, Jesse, we can't even feed ourselves. If we were to cut off all of our foreign trade agreements and all of our imports, we could not even feed ourselves. We are dependent on the Mexican cartels, since they control agriculture in Mexico, to feed us. And so until that dependency comes away from Mexico and the cartels, it is going to be very difficult to come to the table in terms of, hey, we need you to link security and trade together. We need you to take care of the cartels, when they're like, well, you can't even feed yourselves.
Ammon, we'll talk again very soon, my friend. Thank you. Now we have to talk about China. Now, speaking of which, does your cell phone company, they hire a bunch of foreigners? When you have to get a hold of somebody at Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, do they speak and understand English? Are they pleasant? Or is it a nightmare where you have to repeat yourself 20 times, representative? I know what it's like. I have Pure Talk. My cell phone company loves this country. When they give back to veterans, not Black Lives Matter. CEO of Pure Talk walked the jungles of Vietnam, two tours with Mac V. Sog. Pure Talk hires Americans. Oh, and you'll pay less. Why not switch? Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV and switch. We'll be back. We are hot and cold with China. We need them. We hate them. They're our enemy, but we need... It's an ugly situation that Trump is trying to navigate here, and now we're hearing all kinds of things about rare earths. Rare earth this and rare earth that, and China's not going to let us have them. I don't know what any of this means, so that's why we need the Senior Vice President of Business Relations at Liberty University, my friend Dave Bratt. Dave, okay, first of all, everyone says rare earths as if we all know what that means. What does that mean?
I'm not the expert in chemistry or whatever, but they're the rare earth minerals needed for the production of the high-tech sector, from chips to everything, to all of our electric vehicles on down the line. And so they're absolutely critical. And so you're on the money to be covering this today, brother.
Dave, so I guess we should probably rewind a little bit here. How did we get ourselves in a position where China is able to control these things and we don't?
Yes, because for the past 30 years, our geopolitical experts have been wrong about the nature of China and communism. They hoped, and I was kind of with them 30 years ago, if you get the kids rich and get them Mercedes-Benz, they'll become capitalists and we'll all live happier together. But that shift never occurred. It was never even close to occurring. Xi has outflanked us left and right. We are addicted to them and to many other sectors, with national security concerns. And part of the problem is in the U.S. internally, right? The enemy within. I wouldn't call them that, but the Fortune 500 CEOs, they're about profit maximization up until the last month before you lose your country. And so that's how we got here, right? Everybody's looking out for their own narrow self-interest. No one's looking out for the welfare of the country as a whole until President Trump comes along with America First. And then all of a sudden, it's a whole new paradigm. It's a whole new shift in, hemispheric dominance. And he's taking it to China. And he's absolutely right to do that. And we're way late.
Okay, so the taking it to China part, is that why China's getting all huffy and saying, hey, well, no rare earths for you? Where is this trade war going? It seems like it escalates and then it dies down, and it escalates and then it dies down.
Yeah, well, Trump levied significant tariffs on them. They responded, and, it's going to be interesting because Trump takes his public image seriously in this taco thing, right? The changing up and down, like you just said, he's getting sick of that narrative. And so I'm friends with some other Trumpians in his universe, and they think it's time to go full on. And all the China hawks for the past 5 years have been counseling us to decouple. Now, of course, Wall Street will have a heart attack at that, and it will involve pain. And we're $37 trillion in debt on the fiscal side. We've been debasing our currency on the monetary side. And the American people do not want to eat their spinach. And so it's a cultural problem as well. If you tell the American people you might have to suffer a little to get past a big hurdle here with China, I'm not sure they're willing to go there.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that both parties have tried before and it fails every time, Dave. Yep. You need to suffer. It's just not a winning political message. Midterms are coming up. Donald Trump doesn't want to be impeached every other day. It's a problem.
Yeah. No, and I ran on all that. I was, you know, that's why I was in for 4 years and then booted out. But I ran on the budget, immigration, and the Eat Your Spinach campaign. And then lost to the CIA person that's running for governor of Virginia now. That's a whole nother story. Get me on that one some other day.
Dave, talk to me about Greenland. Obviously, this is something that got pretty famous because Trump kept talking about just taking it. We want it. We're going to buy it. And he's not letting off of this. He's not just screwing off on social media. What's the deal with all this?
Yeah, well, I think it's all related to, you know, our hemispheric dominance. Before, it wouldn't have been questioned with the Monroe Doctrine or whatever. There was no question, but now there is questions. Russia, China's making huge inroads into Brazil, a bunch of South America, and Russia, now we've driven into the arms of China. That's the major screw-up. Of the last several years, coming from our globalist, you know, European Union friends who are not friends at all. And so I think Trump wants to firm up, but all the waterways, all the military strategic points up north as well, Alaska, Russia, it's all up there, right? Do your geography on that. And there's more than meets the eye when it comes to Greenland and all the seaways up far north. Defensive systems going up in the North Pole, and it's a whole new world.
Dave, Donald Trump is getting some well-deserved accolades for being the peace president right now, coming off the Hamas deal and all this other stuff, and all that stuff is great, but there is still one big hot one that has not been solved just yet. What's the update on Russia-Ukraine?
I do not know. I think, you know, I love President Trump on Israel, everything A+. On this one, I don't know if they got to him or changed his logic on this. But in my view, right, this all started with a coup d'etat that the U.S. CIA did on Ukraine way back in 14, et cetera. Putin's made it very clear this is not a negotiation, right? They will be, or at least, you know, the eastern part of Ukraine will be a buffer zone. We lied to them about 17 other countries. We said we wouldn't move an inch further to the east. James Baker III and the Bushes made those promises. Obviously, we didn't keep our word. And so Putin has been very moderated in his views, especially with what Europe is doing to him right now. And now they've got President Trump, you know, threatening medium, long-term stuff going into Russia, which to me is just crazy. But I think President Trump is being told he's got to use leverage. That's the only way to stop the strong man. Instead of, I think you just do what Putin offered 2 years ago in a peace agreement. You know, I want these two pieces of eastern Ukraine, and there's not going to be any security agreements. There's not going to be any NATO expansion. And that was the deal they offered us. And it was fine. It's fine for the U.S., for America first. But the Europeans are itching for a fight with somebody because their economies are bankrupt, literally. And I don't know what they're selling to President Trump, but I don't like it.
Dave, as always, thank you, brother.
Hey, thank you, brother. Great show.
We have Light in the Mood. Next. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. Don Lemon's an idiot, and people always tell him about it.
Okay, crossing the border illegally is not a crime?
No, it's not a criminal act. Okay. It's a misdemeanor.
So why are they being sent back and saying that they're breaking the law?
That's the point.
Okay, as somebody that actually...
We don't know if they're breaking the law because they won't tell. There's no due process. Where's the evidence? That's the whole point. And if they are breaking the law, most people will say, okay, then they need to go if they're criminals. But if they're not, why are they being rounded up and sent out, especially when he promised to deport the criminals? And now he's not doing that.
Yeah, I don't think we're going...
Misdemeanor is not a crime, is what you're saying.
Yeah. So misdemeanor is not a crime?
It's not a criminal act, no. If you get charged with a misdemeanor, that's not
so
a criminal act.
So why do you charge at all then, if it's not a criminal act?
Because we have different levels of crime. Everything is not the same.
So it is crime.
It's not a crime. You're not breaking the law. I mean, you are breaking the law, but it's not a criminal act.
So it's breaking the law.
You're not breaking the law.
Is there a law?
There are rules that processes that you should follow. Yeah, so you're breaking rules. You're breaking the rules, but you're not necessarily breaking a law.
Maybe just stay in the studio. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.